PhoenixCoAZ.com. Maricopa Water is the exclusive authorized independent Kinetico dealer for Phoenix and Tucson.
Seth Leibson, Chris Buskirk. It's Principles and Politics. The Seth and Chris Show is on now.
Seth and Chris Show broadcasting live from Hillsdale College's Kirby Center here in Washington, D.C. And as promised, we are joined live in the Hillsdale studio here by Dr. Stephen Hayward, author of a great new book that I commend to you very highly, Patriotism Is Not Enough. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Look, we've been talking about this book for a long time. You and I, you and me and Seth, we read the book right before it came out and have completely geeked out about this as only we could about this great book. And maybe just tell the listeners a little bit, what's the book about and why did you write it?
Yeah, gosh, it's actually kind of hard to summarize, although it's not hard to read, I hope.
I want to interrupt there.
Sure.
Very easy to read. Yeah. I mean, this is something that somebody could come to the subject, and it's a little bit of inside baseball, but somebody could pick it up and know exactly what you're talking about, basically from page one.
Yeah, I was maybe the way to describe it is the style of it. It was intended to be an invitation or introduction to some currents of political thought that a lot of people often find forbidding or inaccessible, and so I wanted to draw people into the way certain strains of conservative thought have challenged the conventional way of thinking about political science, especially in the academy, but a lot of it has important implications for jurisprudence at the Supreme Court, how we think about equality, how we think about our political leaders. There's a lot on statesmanship in it. And I took as a narrative device, I called it Patriotism Is Not Enough, which is an odd title, but it was a theme of some of the figures I write about in the book, who thought that, as Ronald Reagan thought, we need to have an informed patriotism in America. Not just patriotism because it's the country you were born in or your father's country, but because it's a country that's different. It's in some ways a meditation on what we otherwise call American exceptionalism, although I don't use that term in the book. I try to use a different and a more common vocabulary than that.
You use as a device basically a lifelong debate between two professors that you knew well. One was your teacher, Harry Jaffa,
right.
Another a friend and a colleague, Walter Burns. You use the debate that they had, and these are both men of the right.
Right.
And you use a debate that they had that went on for, I don't know how long, 40 years, 50 years? A long time.
Yeah, it wasn't quite that long, but for too long, I think.
Long, and right. You use that, as you say, that's the device for you to talk about America, what it means, and is patriotism enough?
Right.
What is the answer?
Right. The answer is sort of no, just plain patriotism. Informed patriotism is what we need. The two figures who are central in the book, although I talk about a lot of individuals who are worth remembering, but the reason I picked Harry Jaffa and Walter Burns is not simply because I knew them, and so part of the book is a memoir, but because they'd had this long feud, and then in what is a coincidence that you almost have to say smacks of divine providence, they died on the same day, both at age 95, about 2 years ago. And right away, people said, gosh, isn't that like Thomas Jefferson and John Adams dying on the same day in 1826? Not just any day in 1826, but July 4th, right? These two men had worked on the
Still one of these amazing coincidences of American history, of all of human history, really.
Absolutely. I mean, the both worked on the Declaration of Independence and died on the same day. And now they'd reconciled some after years of feuding, and Jaffa and Burns never really reconciled, which I think was unfortunate. But I took their two stories and their fights as a narrative device to walk through a lot of ideas that I think are enduring and important.
It's a bit like talking about American history and what American government means, what America is about, by talking about, you know, the Lincoln-Douglas debates. And
right.
you used the same device to say, well, here's a debate between, again, two men who were patriots,
right.
who loved the country, who understood the country. And, you know, as observers now looking back, we have to, in a way, almost sort of laugh. These guys would have agreed on policy positions.
Absolutely.
99 times out of 100, maybe?
Well, and this is actually a very important point. Although they feuded and there was some bitterness to it, and some of their arguments are interesting and serious, they agreed on a lot more, I think, of the fundamental things about how to understand political life. And I try to draw that out. And, you know, a lot of books on politics, and I don't want to be too critical because some of them are by people I admire and friends of mine, but they're too abstract. So I thought a good way to get into some political ideas, again, for non-specialists, is to tell it as a, something of a personality story,
yeah,
connected to real human beings. And so I do tell lots of anecdotes in the stories and even a few jokes here and there, but always trying to draw it back to understanding what we should take away. So one, I'll just mention one, you know, the idea of statesmanship. Both Jaffe and Burns and a lot of their other friends thought that the idea of a statesman is not simply a subjective preference for politicians we like or people who share our ideology, but is actually a serious concept in political thought that can be studied rigorously and analytically. And in academic political science today, that is thought to be a crazy idea, because nowadays political science is all about running multiple regression analyses, and you never actually study real political leaders and the decisions they have to make and the wisdom they need. And so this whole circle of people I write about thought that that was an aspect of political life we needed to recover for students and for citizens.
The thing I do love about the book is the narrative style. I've thought for a long time, even, and I was happy to find out as I grew older, you know, I thought this when I was growing up, the best way to learn history really is biography.
Yes.
And you tell the story basically through biography, and I've done a great job. That's why it's deep, but easy to read.
Yeah, well, I've always thought of myself more as I suffer from the defect of having a PhD, but I've always thought of myself forever as more of a writer than an academic. So I do like to try and write for, I hesitate to say ordinary citizen, but for, as I keep saying, a non-specialist, someone who's not an academic and not an intellectual. And if we're not doing that, you know, we're not getting out of the ivory tower and reaching a general public with edifying and serious arguments.
Steve, what is somebody who maybe is listening to the show, picks up the book, what's something that they're going to learn about America or why America is important that maybe they knew in their gut, but they're going to take away from the book and say, yeah, okay, I knew that, but you actually put it into words. Now I understand it.
Right. I can pick two or three things. I have a whole chapter on that idea of statesmanship and give examples of how to study it in a serious way. Why, for example, Jaffe and Burns and others thought Churchill was important to study and why Lincoln was important to study. And that's point number two, is Harry Jaffe in particular really revolutionized, I think it's literally the case, our understanding of Lincoln starting in the late 1950s. He'd become kind of this gauzy, purely poetic figure, and he's really a lot more than that. And I think modern Lincoln studies really can be dated as before Jaffa and after Jaffa. I mean, I think that's – we overuse the word literally, but this time it's literally true.
It literally is true.
Right.
It's literally, literally true.
I have a chapter on a phrase that's used a lot these days, but it's still kind of forbidding, that we all know as the administrative state. What it means is this now unofficial or semi-official fourth branch of government. We used to call it just bureaucracy, but it's not just bureaucracy and the inefficiency we think of that. But the administrative state, as Jaffa and his students figured out, represents a new form of rule. The experts rule us, and they increasingly rule us unaccountable to elections and unaccountable even to the popular branches of government, like even the president and Congress sometimes now can't reach what the administrative state does. This is actually the question, I think, of the Trump administration, and which is why the book, which I didn't think would be topical, actually turns out to be quite topical.
Yeah, this is the crisis. You and I were together Monday night at a dinner celebrating the launch of your book, or the publication of the book. And you're talking about Chapter 9. This was the question I didn't get a chance to ask Monday night, because I don't look, I like the whole book, but Chapter 9, I thought, was, I think you're exactly right when you say this is the crisis in American government now, is this unaccountable, unelected, what we call the bureaucracy or the administrative state that writes, you know, what is it, maybe half of all rules and regulations that come out every year. They touch every aspect of our lives, and Congress does not oversee them. They have abdicated that responsibility. The executive branch, the president even, and we've seen this with President Trump, almost can't control them, even though they work directly under him as part of the executive branch. Seth, I've been doing all the talking. No, I know you want to jump in here, because if anybody likes this book more than I do, maybe it's you.
I almost forgot you were there, Seth. Sorry.
Well, Steve, I'm sorry. You know me, the shrinking violet. We are talking to Steve Hayward. Let me plug it, because it can't be plugged enough. The book is Patriotism is Not Enough. The author is Stephen Hayward. And, Steve, what I love that you are able to do, and I'm hoping maybe you can explain some of this, is that you take these very high notions, these high principles, all the way from Aristotle to the founding, and then you explain not only those things very clearly as our founders understood them and as this country was founded. But then you go into, in this book, the progressive era, which tried to reverse all of that. And you make that very clear. These are high terms that we throw around a lot. But one of the things Chris and I talk a lot about is today's political science, like today's journalism, fails to do what Harry Jaffe and Walter Burns taught, which was actually something quite simple. They got from Leo Strauss, their teacher, understanding these thinkers and these writers the way they understood themselves. And I wonder if when we come back, because we're going into a break, you might say something about that.
Sure.
Chris and I always put it in the phraseology of everyone talks about the subtext, no one talks about the text anymore. When you go to the text, it's actually pretty simple. But, you know, as was said in Screwtape Letters, the task is to fuddle them, and fuddled we have become. But we have, thankfully, Steve Hayward's book. He'll talk more about it in a moment. Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. I am Seth Leibson. He is Chris Buskirk, broadcasting live from the Kirby Center, Hillsdale College, covering CPAC from Washington, D.C. Chris is, thanks to the wonderful sponsorship of Hillsdale College, just a wonderful institution that stands for teaching the important things, the permanent things, the necessary things, how to preserve a republic of the people, by the people, for the people, and not just to their students, but to anyone who wants to be, who wants to avail themselves of the great teaching at Hillsdale. For example, you can get a free subscription to their monthly publication, Imprimis, which is a speech digest, comes every month. You can get free online courses from Hillsdale. You can go to hillsdalefreedom.com. Uniting all of the essences of what Hillsdale stands for is this moment on our radio show. Larry Arnn, the president of Hillsdale, was a student of Harry Jaffe's. Our guest, Steve Hayward, was also a student of Harry Jaffe's, as were Chris and I. And Steve Hayward, our guest, has a book out right now we're talking to him about called Patriotism Is Not Enough, Harry Jaffe, Walter Burns, and the Arguments That Redefined American Conservatism. Hillsdale is a place of that learning, and I'd like to think this show is, but it's all encapsulated in Patriotism Is Not Enough, your book, Steve, which does so much in so few pages. I mean, it takes you from Aristotle to Reagan. And when we went to the break, we were talking about the great teaching that we got and that our teachers got was that we just need to understand these people as they understood themselves. And since about 1945, that stopped. Can you say a word about that? Do we still have Steve?
Oh, I'm back.
Yep. Steve, I was just throwing it back to you on that whole issue of understanding thinkers and teachers as they understood themselves.
Right. Sorry.
Yeah,
we had a little gap there for a minute and didn't hear you for about 20 seconds.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well,
that's all right.
The NSA notwithstanding.
Right. I blame somebody. George W. Bush we're supposed to blame still, right?
Yes.
I don't know.
Anyway. Yes. <laughs> Right. The progressives.
Yes, right.
I blame the administrative state.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go. Right. The Federal Communications Commission is on to us. Right. So talk about the progressives a little bit. So, I mean, one of the things I draw out in the book has several parts to it. But one of them is that there was a blind spot for conservatives for quite a while that I sort of recognized doing research for this, although it's been on my mind for a while. But, you know, the conservatives of the 1950s who really started the modern conservative movement, whether it's Russell Kirk or William F. Buckley at National Review or a number of other people like that, or the economists like Milton Friedman and Hayek and other important people who are also my heroes. Their horizon line really was two things in the 50s. It was the New Deal, which was very recent in mind, had its problems. And then, of course, there was the challenge of communism from the Soviet Union. And those are the two poles, you might say, against which the early conservative movement set itself against. And it wasn't until later, I mean, really into the 60s and 1970s, that especially students of Jaffe, a couple of parts himself, thought about this, really recognized that the violence to the American Republic predated the New Deal. It really was the progressive era. And people started reading people like Woodrow Wilson, and then a lot of names people won't know who listen to the show, like Herbert Crowley or John Burgess, and they were important intellectuals 100 years ago. But Wilson we all know, of course. And essentially their argument was explicitly the Declaration of Independence is obsolete and pay no attention to it. Woodrow Wilson almost literally said that, pay no attention to it. The Constitution was obsolete and defective. And if Wilson had his way, we would have thrown out the Constitution and wrote and written a new one. Instead, they substituted the doctrine of progress. They invented the idea of the living Constitution, meaning we could discard its original meaning. And in one sentence, their whole argument can be reduced to, we need to get over the American founding and move beyond it and leave it behind. And I think the distinctive contribution of people like Jaffa and Burns and a lot of their friends like Martin Dryman and Herb Storing, and I can go on with a long list of important thinkers, is they said, no, this is wrong. The progressives were wrong. The truths of the American founding were not just truths for 1787, but represent permanent wisdom that is just as important and applicable today as it was in 1787. And that's become a very robust body of literature and thinking and represents, to my mind, the most fundamental challenge to the left today.
Steve, when we talk about fundamental challenges to the left, one looks at the academy. These are two professors you write about, amongst others, Jaffa and Burns. They're no longer around. Some of their students are. And, of course, you have Hillsdale College. And a conversation Chris and I engage the listeners with all the time is, okay, you have a straight-A student. You have a very successful high school student who gets into the most elite colleges and also gets into some colleges where they teach the things that Jaffa and Burns taught, but with perhaps lesser status as an elite college. What do you do? Where do you send your student? And this is an eternal question we ask, but the academy just ain't the place to learn this stuff anymore, quite frankly. I mean, Hillsdale students, of course, and a few others, but nothing like Hillsdale students. And no one at Harvard's going to get this anymore. No one's going to get it at Cornell anymore. These were the places to get it once upon a time.
Right. Now, this is a real crisis, I think. It depends. If a parent of a high school student actually asks me for advice, the first thing I want to know is does your son or daughter have some idea what they want to study in college? If they want to do science, math, engineering, economics, then there's a lot of latitude because those disciplines, even economics, are reasonably sensible, a lot of very good places. If they're interested in literature, political science, or history, then the number shrinks a lot. And so Hillsdale has to be at the top of your list. For political science, there's a few places I can heartily recommend, Boston College is good. You know, our friends at Claremont McKenna College. There's several others I can think of. But, boy, there aren't very many. And those are, Boston College, Claremont, those are premier liberal arts universities. Notre Dame is very good for political science.
So, Steve, let me ask you this then. This begs the question of your book. Would you say the American people get it and the institutions basically don't anymore? What Harry and Walter were teaching, what you write about in your book, Patriotism is Not Enough, it suffuses the country, especially right now. But yes. It's at discount at most universities. It's an interesting disconnect, isn't it?
I could go on a long time about this. I'll just say what I've been saying since 2009 when the Tea Party first appeared. The Tea Party people got mocked for saying they were defending the Constitution.
Yeah.
But, some clever reporter would ask some Tea Party protester or rally attendee, well, what's your opinion on the Commerce Clause, which was one of the key constitutional questions of Obamacare? And, of course, most people had no sort of serious opinion about the Commerce Clause, but that missed the point.
Right.
The Tea Party people understood that something was wrong and our Constitution was being subverted and we needed to give it back. So, yes, Seth, I think people do get at an instinctual level what's wrong and what needs to happen, and that's part of why Trump won, I think.
Do you have time for another segment with us, Steve?
Absolutely.
Great. I want to keep you. By the way, folks, if you have questions for Steve Hayward on his book or on where we are as a patriotic country or in our patriotic learning, he's happy to take your calls at 602-508-0960. Our guest, Steve Hayward, author of the new book, Patriotism is Not Enough, Harry Jaffa, Walter Burns, and the arguments that redefined American conservatism. If you want to know where Chris and I got our intellectual upbringing. It's all in this book. Steve, we can't thank you enough for writing it or for staying with us. We'll be right
sure
back.
Thing.
You bet.
Sun, down, you better take care if I find you've been creeping around my back stairs.
Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. I'm Seth Leibson. He's Chris Buskirk in Washington. Privileged he is to be sitting with, privileged we are to be having on the line, Steve Hayward, author of a brand new book, Patriotism is Not Enough, Harry Jaffa, Walter Burns, and the Arguments That Redefined American Conservatism. Steve, would you say something about the title itself? That's kind of an interesting title. Patriotism is not enough. We kind of think, well, I'm a good patriot, I'm a good American, but not enough.
Yeah, that's a phrase that Jaffa used to use in class. I don't think he ever wrote it down anywhere. And what he meant by that was, it's just merely loving your country. That's a good thing, but it's not sufficient to defend our country from modern challenges, both from, you know, when he would say that 30 years ago, it was communism abroad, but also nihilism at home, right? We have a lot of self-destructive homegrown forces. In fact, when the Cold War ended and the Berlin Wall came down and we were all celebrating the end of history and the triumph of the old-fashioned liberalism, Jaffa gave a lecture where he said, oh, no, things are actually about to get worse. And none of us believed him, but he turned out to be right about that. And then Burns agreed with this. And Burns, Walter's final book just a few years ago, was called Making Patriots. And it's a very evocative book about the problem of how do you inculcate a deep patriotism. And he says patriotism has to be acquired or taught. It's not actually natural for a country like America that's founded on distinctive principles that are under attack by so much of the left these days.
Steve, Harry Jaffa wrote an essay, I think one of his better, but that's always, you know, it's an embarrassment of riches when you make that statement. Equality is a conservative principle, which
right.
I just reread for the first time in a number of years. He makes the point in that essay, and I think this maybe is a little bit of what you're referring to. He says, you know, with the fall of communism, by the way, the essay was written before that happened.
Right.
So with the fall of communism, leftism in the Western world becomes more dangerous because it is no longer identified with a foreign foe.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And we have seen that play out in spades, no?
Right. Absolutely. You know, when I was in college back in the 70s, Marx and Marxism were still very big things. And, you know, I don't, you know, I'm at, you know, UC Berkeley. I like to say I'm an inmate at UC Berkeley. And it's not so much Marx anymore. It's things that are much worse. It's this postmodern, totally subjective linguistic analysis that comes from especially the French philosophers like Michel Foucault and, you know, the legacy of the Frankfurt School, which I won't bore listeners with right now. But it's really worse.
Our listeners know those things. We've had Michael Walsh, who wrote
Pleasure Palace, right.
Right, which is all about that.
All right. Oh, good. Then, well, the point is that, you know, at least with a Marxist, you could argue with him. That Marxism was a rational scheme based on materialist economics. And although it was wrong, you can have a rational disputation with the Marxist. You actually can't with these postmodernists because they say that, in fact, language itself is subjective. Language is just a tool for power. And I finally come to the point on the rare occasions when you tangle directly with somebody like this, which is actually hard to do. I always say, not only why are we having this conversation, if you doubt objectivity, but how are we having this conversation? I mean, you and I are using language to communicate because it, you know, connects to something real and objective in the world. There's a certain kind of madness with saying that we actually – there's no objective basis for real communication. It's just intersubjectivity. And one of Jaffa's last interviews when he was about 90, he took note of this and said, how do you even talk to these people anymore? I don't know. I mean, that was a rare sort of question for Jaffa or moment of doubt, but that's how badly things have gone awry.
Steve, we have you said it was cool to take calls, and our
yep.
and our callers came right at us on this. Jackie in Scottsdale, go right ahead. You're on with Steve Hayward.
Yeah, Jacques. It seems like the Republican,
Jacques, sorry.
The Republican Party, nationally and state level, should have a role to play in this in outreach to the people that post-educational people after they get out of school and people my age, you know, 70 and 60s and so forth, we kind of lose touch. We listen to radio. Dennis Prager's made an attempt at that with Prager University. It seems like the Republican Party could pick up some of this tutelage also of the things that you folks are talking about and writing about and having, I don't know, workshops, things like that on a formalized basis to discuss some of these things in order to deal with leftism. Because as you're pointing out, you can't have a conversation with these folks, but we need to educate ourselves. Even if we can't convince them, we need to understand how they operate. And it seems like the Republican Party's got to take more of an educational role than just that.
Yeah, it's a good point, Jacques. And I want to respond to it and throw it back to Steve Hayward, our guest on that, on the other side of this break.
Sure.
Steve, if you'd think about this, it's interesting what Jacques highlights. We miss so much in college. But comes a David McCullough or comes an HBO series on John Adams, or was it Showtime? Whatever, a series on John Adams, and people can't get enough of it. They can't get enough of this biography of history because they missed it in the university. There is this thirst outside the college, even if the college deprives us of it. Maybe you could say a word on that on the other side of this break.
Sure thing.
We'll be right back, Chris and I will, with Steve Hayward, author of Patriotism Is Not Enough.
I hold you in my arms. I won't dance. He loves you.
Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. I'm Seth Leibson. He is Chris Buskirk. He's live in Washington, D.C. at Hillsdale's Kirby Center with our guest, Stephen F. Hayward, author of a new book, Patriotism Is Not Enough. Steve, right before the break, caller was talking about the themes you write about, the themes we talk about on this show often enough, and saying we need to do more for those who aren't in colleges, who aren't, you know, blessed and benefited with the teachings that they get as students at places like Hillsdale. For the larger community, the kinds of books that sell, hopefully yours will be added to the list. You know, when you think of these great biographies that come out from time to time, they prove there is this thirst out there that was not slaked when students were in college, I think.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. By the way, I can't believe it took me this long in the hour to point out that Patriotism Is Not Enough is the perfect mascot book for Patriot Radio.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems to me obvious for anyway. I've been making this
that,
point.
That was the subtle esoteric teaching of not saying it, but you fractured the inference and now you're no longer in the Straussian school. So.
I've been saying, not just me, but I've been saying for quite a while, and actually I've tried to embarrass or provoke or humiliate academic historians by saying, why is it all these best-selling books about the founders like John Adams and Hamilton are written by journalists and not by academic historians? Academic historians have given up on biography, or if they do, they write about the kitchen maid, the social history of Hamilton's kitchen maid or something like that, right? It's something ridiculous.
Which gets fantastic reviews and nobody buys because it's boring.
Well, it gets fantastic reviews in maybe the Journal of American History that nobody reads, right? You would think that even the ambition of somebody in academia would want to write best-selling books for a general audience, but they don't anymore. And I think that's pathetic, and it tells you what's wrong with a lot of our academic departments in the humanities. They actually pride themselves on being inaccessible to the general public, which is why one reason why they are losing students and shrink. You know, the number of liberal arts majors at elite universities like Harvard and Yale has gone from about 25% in 1970 to, I think, about 8% today. So those departments are shrinking everywhere, and justifiably so, when they decided to be A, both left-wing, and B, consciously irrelevant. Now, the caller said maybe the Republican Party should consciously do something about this. I am reminded in the late 70s, because I unfortunately am that old, that the Republican Party decided for a while in the late 70s that it wanted to be the party of ideas. And they even published a quarterly journal called Common Sense with articles about policy and history and, you know, serious things. And I think that was part of, you might say, the intellectual critical mass of that period that gave rise to the election of Ronald Reagan and then the Reagan years. And maybe that should be repeated. I hadn't thought of this, but I think the caller's suggestion is one that maybe the Republican Party should take up. I mean, after all, the Democratic Party is now allied with the university towns. I mean, they're bastions of the Democratic Party. We know that professors give their contributions 96% to the Democratic Party. Why shouldn't the Republican Party just go into opposition to this and say, get here the education that universities will no longer give you, and it's education for everybody and not just college-age kids?
One of the interesting things, Steve, that one concludes when they read your book, if they weren't directly beneficiaries of Harry Jaffa's teachings, if they weren't his students like the three of us were. But what someone can pick up from your book is that students of Jaffa or Walter Burns, who you also write about, these were teachers in our lifetimes. They only passed away in the past three years ago. They were schooled differently than today's college professors. They had a wealth of knowledge. They had a breadth and depth of knowledge that's just very, 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 very rare and difficult to find in an academic these days. Indeed, these great political science teachers, I don't remember what Walter Burns' major was, but Harry Jaffa's major was in literature.
Right. So was Walter, I think,
okay.
At the University of Iowa.
There you go. These were literature guys who went on to teach political science like nobody's business, and they could quote Shakespeare from memory. I mean, what they could do, what is it about the academy itself and training itself? Is it what you said? Is it that historians now write about one day in the life of one maid, of one person? Is that what they're taught? Is that why they don't know as much as, say, Harry and Walter did in their days?
That's part of it. I mean, I think that if you think about when they went to college as undergraduates, it was in the 1930s. And guess what? If you go back to education in those days in most fields, you didn't have a lot of textbooks.
Yeah.
Instead, you read the primary sources. So you read Shakespeare's plays instead of a book about Elizabethan literature, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In political science, you would read, you'd read the great thinkers and you'd read biographies. That's fallen out of fashion in literature, in history, and in political science. And now in political science, is all an awful lot of it is sort of mathematics. It's regression analyses. No one ever reads the speeches and deeds of great statesmen for the contemporary lessons they could offer us. And I think that's a great mistake. And by the way, political science majors are declining at a lot of universities because they find it boring. History is boring. I mean, the left has managed to not only pervert history, but they've managed to make it boring.
That's what they've done with America. As you know,
right.
Dr. Bennett and I were on this kick for a while on history textbooks, and a lot of people like to say, well, they're all very political tendentious, and true enough, but worse is they take this, what we called the second greatest story ever told, and they made it boring somehow.
Right. And
the great crime to us.
Right. And in my sort of university life, which is a midlife career change for me, I often find that that's what I'm trying to tell liberals on college campuses. I don't argue about their liberalism. I leave that alone. I accuse them of boring students to death. And they actually hate that accusation more than being accused of being liberals, because I think deep down they know it's true.
Steve, somebody's listening to the show and they think, you know what, I didn't get that education in college or in high school or wherever, but I want it. I'm hungry for it. Obviously, the first stop is a new book called Patriotism is Not Enough. But as soon as somebody is done purchasing 10 or 20 copies on Amazon, where do they go from there?
Well, we may as well give a free plug to our host at Hillsdale College. Their online courses on history, on economics, on the Constitution. And they're free. They're very much worth taking in. They're in short nuggets. There's a lot of good stuff at the teaching company that you can take advantage of. Some very good conservative writers and intellectuals have done programs for the teaching company. I'm not a fan of all of the biographies written by journalists, but some of them are pretty good, and they're always worth reading. David McCulloch, one of you mentioned, wrote a very good biography of Harry Truman. And so you do kind of have to be self-taught, but I do think it is helpful to try and do a somewhat organized program. One of the previous callers, Jacques, I think, mentioned Prager University. Those are short little nuggets. And actually this is true of my own education as an undergraduate. I often learned more outside of the classroom than I did inside the classroom on my own. Sometimes it was miscellaneous and not systematic, but I think you want to carry that attitude forward as an adult. No matter what you study in college, I think that's just the beginning of your education, and you keep it going on your own.
Well, Steve, we just can't thank you enough for your time with us. We can't thank you enough for the book. The book, folks, Patriotism is Not Enough. Harry Jaffa, Walter Burns, and the Arguments That Redefined American Conservatism. Even if you don't know who Jaffa and Burns are, perfectly fine. You will learn everything you need to learn about our outlook on the founding, the destruction, the deliberate effort to destroy that understanding of the founding by the progressive era, and what we can do about it and how to think about it. Courtesy, Stephen F. Hayward. Bless you, Steve, and thank you.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
You betcha. Chris and I will be right back with a couple concluding thoughts. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. I'm Seth Leibson. He is Chris Buskirk. Live, he is, in Washington, D.C., from the Kirby Center at Hillsdale College today, covering CPAC from Radio Row tomorrow and Friday, all courtesy, really, of Hillsdale, which has supported this week's broadcasting from CPAC. We are so grateful to them. Want you to go to hillsdalefreedom.com. where you can find out how you can receive a complimentary subscription, totally free subscription to Imprimis, which is their monthly speech digest. You can also take free online course at hillsdalefreedom.com. If you believe in self-government, as we do, then you also have to believe in selves worthy of governing. These are two concepts that Hillsdale is uniquely excellent at teaching, both to its students and to the public at large, those that take their online courses, those that subscribe to Imprimis. For the people, of the people, by the people. That's the essence of Hillsdale, and no mistake, so many of their students went actually and volunteered to fight at Gettysburg as they did. Chris, why don't you say a few words about what you're going to be doing tomorrow and what we can expect the rest of the week?
Seth, I'm going to be running the next couple days. CPAC is all day. It started today, all day tomorrow, all day Friday, and then Saturday morning. Programming note, Friday morning, President Trump is speaking at CPAC. So there is a possibility, I'll tease this, there is a possibility, remote as it may be, of getting a few minutes with President Trump. By no means guaranteed, but there is that possibility that we'll get to record just a couple minutes with the president. But there are so many other great people who are going to be there, Ted Cruz, Scott Walker, Sheriff David Clark, and on and on it goes. So we'll be grabbing as many of the folks as they come by our spot there on Radio Row to step in and talk for a couple of minutes. The dynamic at CPAC is everybody's kind of going by, and you grab them. Maybe it's only 5 minutes or whatever, but there's so many people in one place at one time, and we can talk to them about the things that are important to us and are important to the future of the country. I want to just close with this. It is Washington's birthday. It's something that Washington wrote in a circular to the states in 1783. But before the Constitution, by the way, and he wrote, you know, the Constitution was 1787, but here's what Washington writes. He says, "The foundation of our empire was not laid in the gloomy age of ignorance and superstition, but at an epoch when the rights of mankind were better understood and more clearly defined than at any former period. The researches of the human mind after social happiness have been carried to a great extent. The treasures of knowledge acquired by the labors of philosophers, sages, and legislatures through a long succession of years are laid open for our use, and their collected wisdom may be happily applied in the establishment of our forms of government. The free cultivation of letters, the unbounded extension of commerce, the progressive refinement of manners, the growing liberality of sentiment, and above all, the pure and benign light of revelation." That was Washington, folks. Today is his birthday. Just take a moment to remember the indispensable man.